joining us on the WBGO Journal is one of the recipients of the 2017 MacArthur Fellowship, and he is no stranger to the city of Newark. In fact, was the first urban designer to receive the honor, among the first. Damon Rich joins us. Damon, thanks for being here.
How you doing, Doug?
So when you first heard that you were actually going to get this wonderful award, what was the first thing that popped into your mind? Did you really think that this was going to happen?
Well, you know, these days when you get a cell phone call and you're trying to make out what the person is saying and it starts with, "Congratulations, you have been selected for," you don't expect it to be actual good news, you know, maybe a credit card offer or something. And so when I got the call on a Friday afternoon, that was exactly my thought until maybe 5 minutes into the call when they actually started to read a small piece that they had written, and it seemed like they had done a little more than just Google me.
So is it safe to say you almost hung up on them?
I didn't pick up a couple times.
Is that right?
Who picks up strange calls from Chicago in the middle of a Friday afternoon?
Right, and that's where the call originated from.
The MacArthur Foundation is based there.
Mm-hmm.
It's a confidential process. And so the first that I had heard about it was this phone call. And that made it all the more surprising.
Now, you work for a company called Hector. You and your partner, Jay Shin, lead Hector. What is Hector?
Well, Hector is an urban design, planning, and civic art studio. We really focus on building and designing things where people live, where they work, where they recreate. Oftentimes, we're working on parks and buildings and urban design studies. We also, the civics arts part, is really about finding ways for these design processes to open themselves up to maybe less expected types of coalitions. So, for example, while I served as the planning director, some of these techniques were in development, and projects included things like being able to work with a Sussex Avenue School on a project that first had 12 and 13-year-olds investigating the water system of Newark, actually going up and seeing where water comes from and then what happens to it after we flush, going down to the Passaic Valley Sewerage Commission. From there, the students made drawings and essays about what they saw, what they thought was good about it, what they thought might be some of the problems. And then finally, they made large artworks that were presented to the community. And so what they learned was further conveyed and spread as they presented it and shared it with their neighbors.
Damon, correct me if I'm wrong, but urban planning has really taken off over the past decade, especially when we've had disasters and people learning on how things need to be built, whether structurally or designed. Is that a correct statement?
Well, you're right. One of the most fundamental questions in practicing urban planning, urban design, and architecture is how are we as people going to live together? If you took a time machine back, even just 100 years in this country, in a place like Newark, if you owned a large tract of land, there were very few people you had to consult before building something with your land or developing it. It really was a property rights regime. And what that meant was, say you rented a place and you liked it a lot, it meant the next week, all of a sudden, your neighbor could open up a pig farm. And so as people started living closer together in villages, towns, and cities, you saw more and more of these coordination problems among how land and space was going to be used and controlled. And so, again, 100 years ago, you had the beginning of these large social mechanisms, things that sound really boring, like zoning and land use regulations. But what these were the first mechanisms that really insisted that even if you weren't the owner of a piece of land in a place like Newark, you had some right to have a say in what happened to that land. So today, when you go to a planning board hearing or a zoning board hearing, as much as those kinds of places and events might seem alienating or difficult to understand, those, in fact, are the descendants of these first attempts to democratize how we build. And people in Newark, and this was why it was a great place to work as an urban designer and planner, know a lot about those processes and have a long and deep tradition of really standing up for their rights to be involved in these collective decisions about how the city develops.
How many planning board meetings do you think you've attended through the years?
Well, it regularly meets 2 times a month, and I was working with the city government for 7 years, so you can do the math pretty straightforwardly.
And you actually worked under 3 different administrations here in Newark, 3 different mayors.
That was a really great part of my experience, too. I came in during Mayor Booker's first term, then also got to serve under Mayor Quintana and then under Mayor Baraka. And, you know, all 3 fascinating men. You know, the challenge from my perspective as an urban designer was to really be able to translate the sometimes technical or detailed concerns of how a city or a building or a park is built into language where a mayor would quickly be able to recognize the importance and the significance of the decision at hand.
You used the word boring when you were describing how some people look at urban design and planning because they don't understand it for the most part. And people, when they don't understand, they take the easy way out. But when did this St. Louis native say, it's not boring, it's fascinating?
Well, I grew up in the western suburbs of St. Louis, at first a suburb called Creve Coeur, which is the funny Midwestern pronunciation of the French for broken heart. And, you know, even though there were certainly many wonderful things, I have wonderful family, friends, growing up there, of course, a very segregated place by income and by race, really left me with a lot of questions about where that place had come from. So when I did travel through the metropolitan area from the suburbs down to St. Louis proper, whether it was for a concert or a Cardinals game or to go to work with my dad like I did every single Saturday growing up, it really, I think, was natural for any kid to start to say, how did this happen? How did these different spaces become built out so differently physically, in terms of who was there, in terms of the kind of culture? You know, why were young kids like me and my friends in a situation where it seemed like everything was so quiet that we ended up having tussles with local police around curfew laws as we would, you know, take midnight strolls through private golf courses? So really, a lot of these questions came to a head when I got to do a junior leadership program when I was in high school that brought together young people from around the metropolitan area and had a really brilliant facilitator named Bruce Carl, who really opened up discussions about race and power and money and politics. So, for example, we'd go from informational interview with the chair of the largest bank in the city to talking to the comptroller of St. Louis to talking to the mayor of East St. Louis. And it was really by beginning to try to absorb and analyze these different competing views that I think I found my way to approach architecture and urban planning.
Does Bruce Carl know that you've won this fellowship?
Sadly, we lost Bruce many years ago. And so, you know, he's one person among many that this award has really caused me to just feel immense gratitude towards. And that really, you know, that list extends to Newarkers, some of whom are still with us and some of whom we've lost. So, you know, people like Junius Williams, who's, of course, still with us, and, you know, organizations, you know, from the People's Organization for Progress to IYO to La Casa to Don Pedro to people up in Clinton Hill to ECD, Episcopal Community Development, which is a group, again, that we sadly lost to UVSO. You know, I think about people like Sister Carol Johnston, who was an indefatigable advocate for environmental justice in the city, and really on from there. I mean, for a kid who was educated in many ways to be ignorant, coming from where I was coming from, I, remain deeply in the debt of so many Newarkers that pulled my jacket, both in a personal way, but even more so, I think, in a professional way, to try to point this urban designer and planner towards some things that might be worth doing.
Is it safe to say, then, that Damon Rich is a good listener?
Well, we got to try to learn, and get by any way that we can. Definitely working for a city government kind of forces one to develop coping strategies, because you can imagine the kind of reactions that anybody, let alone Newarkers, has when you're a pale, complected suburbanite who shows up at a public meeting and says, "I'm from the government. I'm here to help." So all kinds of things get said. And, for me at least, what always seemed most productive was to really try to figure out, even if I felt, some differences from what someone was telling me in terms of the technicalities of a process or the political frame that they were bringing to the discussion, it only seemed right to try to put those things in the picture of bigger questions, like why is this person motivated to stand up about this? And that's something that I've, again, been utterly in amazement at and grateful for, is how many residents of the city of Newark will take time out of their day, after a day at work on a Wednesday, to come out to an evening meeting to talk about whether it be a proposed development project or the design for a new park. It's that kind of civic enthusiasm that makes anything that I do possible.
The park right across the street, Military Park, was transformed not that long ago. The old park that at one point many people were afraid to cross in the middle of the night has become a kind of a hub of activity during the daylight hours, at least, here in this revamped downtown park near NJPAC and WBGO. What do you think about Military Park?
My years working for the city government, 2008 to 2015 or so, were an absolutely engrossing time to be involved in questions of real estate and develop in the city of Newark. On one hand, we were able to look back to earlier spurts of investment and growth. So the late 1970s, when we got the first pieces of the Gateway Center. While on one hand, those kind of developments, including the transformation of Military Park, were cause for celebration. They really were the fruit of so many people's long labors to attract capital to a city that had been systematically disinvested, to begin to insert new stories into the way that people thought about Newark, other than just some kind of a cartoonish icon for city gone wrong. At the same time that we were celebrating those kinds of wins, it was also a really important part of the Newark tradition to think about the way that those wins were distributed across the city and among Newarkers. For a long time, it's been a thread of discussions in the city about the balance and the distribution between goods coming to the downtown versus the neighborhood, say, or Newark. As I certainly hope everyone in the listening audience knows, was the first major city on the East Coast to elect an African-American mayor, Ken Gibson, in 1970. And certainly even before that, Newark was a place where questions of black and brown liberation played out on so many fields, but definitely including the question of the shape the city should take and how it should grow. So when I walk through Military Park, I'm really filled with that variety of thoughts. On one hand, as you said, it seems like it has been a successful, nearly miraculous transformation, and many, many people's labor went into that. On the other hand, Military Park, is one of those places where conversations happen every single day. I walk through them and people say, wow, like, what is the future of our city? Can some of the things that our parents, within living memory, really fought for this city to be sustained during, this amazingly lucky high point of investment, as we see this kind of change? And I certainly hope that in a small way, I can continue to contribute to those conversations and those And that wide variety of action, that's about New Yorkers coming together to decide what this city should be.
You've been involved in the conversations about the Newark River waterfront, the Newark Riverfront Revival. In fact, you provided the artwork for the Newark Riverfront Guide. So you've been involved with that for quite some time. Is it going to ever be something that we can say, you know, compares to some of the other great riverfront parks on the East Coast?
Well, the riverfront is a great example of, I think, the long-term and complicated dynamics of the development of the city of Newark. When I first came to the city, and one of maybe the two dozen things that then-Mayor Booker had asked me to look at as the city's first urban designer was the riverfront. And so when I went down to get my desk, it held on it about a 3-foot stack of documents that turned out to be all plans for the Newark Riverfront. There was one whole stack that came from the Army Corps of Engineers, which was known as the Minish Park, which maybe you've heard about. There was another whole stack that came from various owners of downtown properties who imagined their properties developed into 60-story towers full of wealthy residents. There also was a stack, a much shorter stack, that came from community organizations in the city of Newark. So the Ironbound Community Corporation, which is the venue through which I met Sister Carol Johnson, other heroes of mine like Nancy Zack. They themselves in the early 2000s had put out a waterfront vision of their own. And so it was clear from looking at this huge amount of paper that the riverfront, although it didn't seem like it was much to look at the time, had actually been the object of a really intense process and imagining and in many ways clash of visions. And so rather than beginning my work with a new vision or what I would think would be the ideal vision for the city, it really made much more sense to start among those visions that had already been put out there to try to understand what about them had worked, what had fallen short, and what was really going to be necessary to make anything happen in real space.
So what kind of time frame are we looking at?
The earliest plans I found date back to the early 1980s, when the idea was if people have been over to Battery Park City in Manhattan, where they created a whole new chunk of Manhattan with landfill and then built a lot of luxury housing on it, that was the articulated vision of a lot of those earliest plans to say, well, what those planners seemed to believe was that most of Newark had incurable problems. This is not at all what I would endorse, but they thought that the riverfront could be basically a new city within the city, something that had everything that its residents needed and therefore needed not to have much of a relationship to the rest of the city. Of course, a lot of Newarkers are familiar with that kind of approach to urban planning and design by, say, visiting the Gateway Center, where on one hand you have this lively world in tubes with its own delis, its own shoe polish stands, and certainly many, many offices and jobs, but that is almost a separate and parallel universe from if you just go two blocks out the door on Mulberry Street to the center of our town at Broad and Market.
We're speaking with Damon Rich, who has won a 2017 MacArthur Fellowship. Before we talk about more about the actual award and what you will do with some of that money, I want to talk about the fact that one of the big concerns from Newarkers is that it's always the downtown area that gets developed and there are plans for. The neighborhoods are the ones people are screaming for people to come up. What kind of answers do you have? What kind of conversations are you having with people about what we can do to make these neighborhoods better?
Well, Newarkers are very attuned to the dynamics of government and business. And one of the things that was really a revelation for me beginning to work for an urban planning office here in Newark was that opposed to many, many areas of life where the city government has a moderate to a minor level of control, obviously until very recently, public education or large issues that concern federal legislation or federal regulation, Superfund sites, the EPA, things like that. when it comes to decisions about how the city is built and what the rules are going to be for that, the city government has an immense amount of influence and control. And one thing I think also that it's really important to remember is that every single time something gets built in Newark, it's the result of a negotiation. And what that means is that the value that comes out of developing the city, whether that be strictly a financial bottom line or different types of social values that we might think about, whether it be that the building contains a daycare center or even a corner store that makes it more convenient for people to pick up a sandwich or a jug of milk. The decisions around how that value is realized really are a public process. And again, you know, back to 100 years ago, you wouldn't necessarily have any choice or voice in what was getting built right next to you if you weren't the owner of that land. Today, this negotiation really is at the center. And so, for example, the recent action by the municipal council to create the city's first inclusionary zoning requirements, and there's a lot of details to that that you can unpack and have many other Newarkers come and share their opinions on. But what that represents is, at least in general, the idea that when development happens in the city, affordable housing is one of the things that the city can put on the negotiating table as part of finalizing the deal to make something happen. So, you know, my answer in terms of people's concerns and questions around the distribution of development is we need to look at these sometimes invisible but very impactful policy tools. And, you know, one of the things that I've been really happy to do, both when I served for the city government and since then, is to visit block clubs, neighborhood associations, communities of faith, and other, and get to run something that we call the Newark Zoning Workshop. And what that is a 2.5-hour workshop that really just breaks down, what is this thing called zoning? Is it good or is it bad? And what the results usually are is that the group that is hosting the workshop by the end has a really clear sense of what parts of this law might be actually useful to them. So whether it's a group that's concerned about too many liquor stores in their neighborhood and they want to have more of a say in the types of retail that are coming in, or a group that's concerned about gentrification and rising rents and they want to understand how affordable housing might be produced and put in place. This kind of workshop is really an attempt to do popular education. And that's something that, you know, for me as a planner, I feel like I learned a lot from people like Septima Clark, you know, who was really instrumental in setting up freedom schools during the civil rights movement, or Etta Baker, who worked a lot with the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee and really specialized in how can you translate from these somewhat arcane, very complicated, sometimes boring dynamics of real estate development into people's everyday language so it can really connect with their concerns and how they understand their self-interest.
You mentioned Nancy Zach. She was one of the first people I ever interviewed here at WBGO, and someone who I also met early on here at WBGO was Dr. Clement Price. I would imagine if Dr. Price was around, he'd be very excited for you, Damon.
Well, Dr. Price was always, an amazing supporter, and I feel like I am one of thousands that benefited from his words of encouragement. I had one pair of shoes that was like this seamless Gucci pair, and whenever I wore them, it was always the first thing that he pointed out that I started calling them my Clem shoes. I also got to add to the list, you know, with Nancy Zach and Clem. Wilbur Cornegay down from the South Ward, you know, involved in the Wequaic Park Association, you know, someone who just taught me so much about, I think, the history and tradition of people's activism for open space. And I couldn't go without mentioning Bob Kervin, someone else, you know, that has gone home in the last couple years, but who left such knowledge and tradition. And I think, this goes for Nancy, too. And I remember so well, we got to design a modest memorial for Sister Carol Johnston down at the riverfront. And she was a member of the Sisters of Charity, an order of nuns. And many of her sisters came down for the memorial. And one of them got up and spoke, shared a couple quick memories of Sister Carol, some funny stories. But after about 2 minutes said, "All right, we all know what Sister Carol would be saying to us now. Get back to work." And that is definitely the voice and the encouragement that I hear in my head from so many Newarkers all the time.
You work with Jay Shin. You both lead Hector, the Urban Design, Planning, and Civic Arts Studio based here in Newark that you talked about earlier. What did Jay have to say when getting the news?
Well, Jay, like a lot of my closest friends and collaborators, I think, sees a lot of this as a great opportunity to really dig at me and make some good fun. the foundation, I think, very famously does not encourage the use of the G word, but rest assured that Jay, among others, uses it to great comic effect. Whether it's that I've forgotten to take out the garbage from the studio, or I lost some important notes. This really gives people some really great material to work with when they're trying to string me up.
And you're obviously talking about the word genius, correct?
That's it.
That's the word. So I'm sure this is probably the first question everybody asks you. It's one of the last questions I'll ask you is, we know that it's a no strings attached $625,000 grant that's over a 5-year period. So it's really to have you either continue the work you're doing or to even go in a different direction. So do you have any ideas yet how you will use some of this money to make a difference?
Well, being 2 years into this next chapter of my work with Hector, it is certainly a tremendous freedom that we feel to have this support from the foundation. And as you said, they very responsibly space out the award over 5 years to be that kind of a sustaining force. One thing that Jay and I have both found, because we both have come from public sector work most recently, myself with the New York City government and Jay working for the New York City Housing Authority. And one thing that we found that certainly at times was frustrating, but more oftentimes really energizing and motivating about working in the public sector is whether you want to be or not, you're in the middle of 1,000 fights and many people's problems. And so whether it debates around how housing should be rehabilitated or how big buildings should be allowed to be, when you're in the local government, you really are hearing from all sides. And one of the upsides of that is because you have this bigger picture of all the forces at play, you can really sometimes see potentials for coalitions that might otherwise seem impossible. So how might, for example, in the case of the first overhaul of Newark's land use regulations and zoning, which was adopted by the Municipal Council in 2015, that was really the result of people with very many interests coming together. So people who were mostly interested in environmental justice, who wanted to look at the rules for industrial development and the kinds of things that might cause asthma and how those things could be kept as far away from, say, young children as possible. Or real estate developers who were really interested in getting rid of rules that they saw as unnecessarily onerous and preventing them from realizing the kind of projects they could. And so all of those groups could come together when you work for the public sector in order to push change. Now that we're an independent design studio, creating those kinds of coalitions and those kinds of collaborations is a little more challenging. Although we've been really lucky, for example, we are currently working with a coalition of community-based organizations and city agencies in Southeast Philadelphia on a new design for a 100-year-old park, as well as a neighborhood plan for the area that surrounds it. And rather than just doing a kind of a la carte neighborhood plan or park design, we were really happy to be able to add additional partners. So the well-regarded Philadelphia Mural Arts, came in and sponsored an early project where we at Hector were able to work with a group of high school students involved in a summer youth employment program to go out and investigate on behalf of our clients, which included the Cambodian Association of Greater Philadelphia, the Bhutanese American Association of Philadelphia, a group called CMAC. We went out and investigated who makes decisions about parks, who decides how much they get cleaned up, who decides what kind of programs happen, who decides on the rules, how do parks get money to get fixed up, and what are the processes involved with that. And then these students were able to make these large posters that communicated what they found to a larger community that then in turn could activate that community to go forward and to build their ranks, to really press the local government and others to get their park fixed up and to get some things going in the neighborhood that they wanted. So one thing with the foundation support that we really hope to do is to keep on working and making better these kinds of ways of working with the many, many types of organizations and people that have something to say about how the city develops. Because in our opinion, when it comes to the justness of solutions, but also how interesting and how far out they are in terms of their design, having all those voices and brains at the table is an essential thing.
Even though you were born in St. Louis, you are a true Newarker now. And when, with this MacArthur Fellowship, brings a stage to you in many ways, do you feel like this is an opportunity for you to tell more people about this city?
I'm always flattered to talk about Newark, although, you know, I think that at least some of my most trusted Newark native friends say that I gotta wait at least until my 10-year mark, which will be coming up in January, before I even start to try to float the claim of being a true Newarker. But, you know, as somebody who feels like, you know, I've learned so much from the history of this neighborhood, I mean, I got to work with a group of over 150 Newarkers, including a whole set of architecture students from NGIT, to build the first physical model to scale of the entire city. This was something that was on display last year to celebrate the city's 350th at the Public Library, and is currently on display on the second floor of City Hall. And it was a lot of fun to make it. It's really colorful. You can see how different buildings are built. A lot of people come to it, and either they are super experts. I remember when Richard from New Community came, and to everyone working on its astonishment, pointed out that we had forgotten the library in Valesburg. But then you also had Newarkers coming in to see it who were surprised at the shape of the city. And, you know, I remember one person said, "Oh, I thought that Newark was shaped like a box instead of, you know, the big long piece that sticks out for Valesburg, or the way that the border along Wequia kind of swoops in and out." But one of the proudest moments of that project is when we opened it up at the library. Junius Williams came out and told the story of NAPA, the Newark Area Planning Agency, I believe is the last day, that was strongly involved in the debate around the construction of the medical school. And he took a laser pointer, and he was able to start tracing out, you know, what originally the mayor wanted to sell to the medical school, Hugh Adonisio, and then what his group demanded in terms of land being turned over to community organizations and services being provided to the community through the Newark agreements of 1968. And, you know, I really feel that if I can play a small role in conveying those stories and their lessons to a wider audience, I'll be really proud.
Last question. Other than Jay, who got the call that you got this MacArthur Fellowship?
Well, it's a funny thing. They call you up, and then if you're convinced that they're for real, they swear you to secrecy except for one person. And being my closest collaborator, there was, you know, even though I felt bad for keeping it a secret from my mom, Jay was definitely the person that I had to share it with, and I couldn't ask for a better partner as we take in everything that's happening and, you know, try to muscle up for what comes next.
And so when mom did find out, what did she say?
It was a pretty funny conversation. You know, I tried to break it down, and I would kind of tell her piece by piece, And every time I would tell her a piece of it, she'd be like, "What?"
I love it.
And you know, and I think that she was still pretty incredulous when we got off the phone. And it wasn't until maybe like a day or two later where one of her neighbors said, "Oh, I've heard about this MacArthur Award and I follow it every year," that I think that she really started to believe that I wasn't pulling her leg.
She didn't say, "My son's finally a genius like I knew"?
Well, actually, the thing that really opened up the emotional floodgates is an amazing woman and artist that I've gotten to know here in Newark named Gladys Barker Grauer, who opened up the first visual arts gallery in the city in the 1970s, and someone who I was happy to work with on the Newark Mural Program and has just been one of those inspirational people. My mother had gotten to meet her once on a mural tour that we had given. And, you know, Rodney Gilbert, another person I've been happy to work with, was on that tour. And when Gladys got the news, she sent me a very nice note. And part of what it said is that my mother must be proud. I remember my mother. And that Gladys said that she would definitely chalk a lot of this up to being raised by a school teacher. So me and my mom were both tearing up on the phone as I read that to her.
And you're not the only person this time around with ties to Newark. Tyshawn went to Arts High School.
I cannot wait to meet Tyshawn Sorey. He's someone who had just come to my attention maybe 4 or 6 weeks before this award. And I, you know, had started looking at some of his LPs. And of course, then I've listened to it more. And, you know, as somebody who's come to be known as white, again, from the suburbs, I am so happy that that the foundation has recognized this year, not just myself as somebody who has learned and benefited so much from Newark, but from somebody who came up in the town, right, and who represents Art High School and who, you know, really clearly is a living embodiment of that strong spirit that has characterized Newark, for years and decades.
On behalf of everybody here, congratulations on winning a 2017 MacArthur Fellowship.
Thanks so much, and I'm so glad it gave me a chance to actually come inside BGO.